The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Discover the world's leading brands at bionic.radio. Radio
Today. Thank you for choosing the weekly podcast from Radio Today. I'm Stuart Clarkson. This week, it's our monthly roundtable edition for November, where we delve deep into some of the issues in our industry at the minute. And in a moment, we'll join our host, Trevor Dan, who's up north this week.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Nick Hazard.
Welcome to the city of skyscrapers they're now calling Manhattan. We're in Media City, which, like that other venerable Mancunian institution, Manchester United, is of course in Salford. And we're gathered in the opulent surroundings of Audio Always, courtesy of the gentleman on my left. Let's meet the panel.
Hi, I'm Stuart Morgan, Managing Director here at Audio Always.
Hello, I'm Kate Cocker. I'm the presenter coach.
I'm Chris Stevens. I run Ignite Jingles and I'm involved with a country station as well.
And I'm Ashley Byrne, I'm the creative director of Made in Manchester, which is another production company.
And this is the Radio Today roundtable for the month of November. Because we are out of London, as we always call it at Audio UK, Ashley, Let's talk about being out of London. Did you read Lisa Nandy's article in The Guardian about how Channel 4 being in Leeds is going to really help?
Yeah, no, I did. I saw that. And you know, she's not the only one. There are other politicians who have said this from all the different political parties, actually. And I think she's absolutely right. I think it is important to have that voice coming from different parts of the UK. We might get hung up here because we're all in the north to say, you know, we need more voices in the north. But it's not about that, really. It's about the whole of the UK. And I think the great thing about what Channel 4 are doing, and let's face it, they were drag kicking and screaming into this originally, but they now seem to be embracing it, is looking at sort of stamping their mark on every single part of the country. So now you see programmes made on Channel 4 and they make a point of saying where it was made. And I think that's really, really important. And I'd like to see in our sector, of course, our biggest buyer is the BBC. I'd like to see them replicating, BBC Radio replicating what Channel 4's doing. I just don't think there's any excuse, really. I think there should be commissioners in other parts of the country. I mean, here in Manchester, we're relatively okay compared to other regions. You know, there's Audio Always, there's Made in Manchester, there's Spark Lab, there's other production companies in this area, and we make some noise. Audio Always have got several long-running strands now. Made in Manchester has certainly got loads of returning series. So we make noise, we punch beyond our weight in this area. But why shouldn't we expect to have an audio content sector in Birmingham, in Nottingham, in Newcastle, in Glasgow, in Wales, wherever, you know what I mean? I think we need to be thinking beyond what we've got at the moment and having commissioners in other areas, because I think commissioners based in other areas, they just see the world in a different way.
Stu, when you talk to BBC commissioners, you often get the impression that they think that what you guys do is make programmes about the Northwest, not in the Northwest. I think you as a company and Ashley have gone a long way to pointing out that actually you can make programmes about anything that's happening in the world, but you can just develop the sector here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I haven't really experienced that sense that we only make programmes about Manchester. But I also think that as we move the conversation on, it almost shouldn't be a thing we even talk about. Mm. I also think that we're in a world now where it doesn't matter where your audio comes from because the listeners are anywhere and everywhere. So I'd like to get to a point where actually it doesn't really matter where you are, whether you're here in Salford or anywhere. If you're making good programmes, if you've got good ideas, you're working with good talent, it doesn't matter. But I think Ashley's got a good point, I think. And I think a good thing for me with what Channel 4 are doing and what the BBC did when 5 Live moved to Media City is they're not just moving a person or putting somebody in a region, they're moving the money as well. And I think that's a big thing, that it's not just about going, we're going to have a person sitting in Newcastle to work with people in the Northeast. They're actually going, let's move whole departments, let's move an energy, a thinking, the wheels that go around commissioning to the regions. And I think that will also just help kind of break down the this out of London barrier that exists.
Kate, you've worked up here, haven't you, for many years. Can you sense that there is more of an audio community now than there used to be?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, over the years, I've always worked in the sort of satellite outside of London station. So even when I was at XFM or when I was working at GWR, we were always outside of London. And it was always very difficult to see through the M25 and get responses, you know, and all of that. But I do think now, you know, especially, you know, in organising this conference, there's loads of people that
Pods Up North.
So Pods Up North, so it's a conference for podcasters living in the north, so it's not even just to go down to London. But now, you know, everyone's here, and I think we're almost a bit, when I'm thinking about speakers and bringing people to the table, I'm almost a bit jaded because I think, well, I know them, everyone knows them. Mm-hmm. But these are big names and they're big people, and, you know, these are people who are interesting to the industry. So there's definitely more of a community here, yeah.
Chris, you sell jingles and imaging all over the world. Does it matter to the people of, you know, Mauritius or Dallas, whether you're based in Salford or Edgware?
They never seem to have had a problem with it so far. I think it's really... you see, we're unusual in that we don't work very much with the BBC. We work almost entirely with commercial radio. And every week we're sending audio, as you say, to time zones all over the place. For us, it's more actually about us being part of a community is nice. And there is a community. You know, this one tram line that we're at the end of now, as you travel along, you kind of pass everything here at Media City, then Bauer and Global and Communicorp and so on. And there's a whole scene up here that means, you know, it's easy to get to London, but you don't have to keep going there for everything because there's enough talent around the north of England, and it's a really exciting time.
Can I ask you about this, Stuart? You've got quite a few strands now on BBC networks. How often do you have to go to London?
I don't have to go to London at all, I don't think. I make a choice to go to London because I think, like I said earlier, you know, it's good to feel part of a community. I don't think it really matters whether you're in London, but I think we, and I think not just Audio Always, I think all out of London indies have kind of said to the BBC, look, let's have a video conference when there's a commissioning call. I mean, I sit at meetings for BBC networks, and Ashley's laughing because most of the time the video conference doesn't work.
Yeah, I've been there too. I used to be on those.
But the principle is that, but yeah, so, you know, we feel connected to networks. You know, would it be better if we were sitting in the same room? Maybe. Are there advantages being a little bit further removed that you can kind of get on and do your own thing? And, you know, there's positives and negatives to that, but I don't feel the need to go to London lots.
Kate, can I ask you about the Audio Content Fund? Because you're actually on the panel.
Yeah.
How does it work when people submit their ideas? So this is the fund commercial radio stations and independent companies get together, and they want a show, the indie wants to make it, they bring the idea to you.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to tell us about the process that you go through as judges?
Well, we get the entries come in. They get looked through to see if they are, I can't think of the word, applicable, so that they meet the criteria. And then we get the entry forms and we all go through them. And then we bring our, you know, much like, it's actually quite a lot like, you know, like on a judging panel. Mm. You bring your kind of your favourites to the table, and then we just work through it all and work out which ones we think are the most sort of deserving, whether the criteria has been met, whether they're good ideas. And it is, I think, you know, if anyone has ever done any judging, there's also a context factor. So as long as the criteria is met and the mandatory and the supplementary and all of that is done, then I think it's about which one of this lot is going to be have the most impact here.
You got something through, didn't you, Ashley? Mm. But you've not been entirely uncritical of the process.
No, I haven't. For heaven's sake, you know, it's early days. We've only had two rounds anyway.
Yeah.
And obviously the Content Fund is feeling its way and whatever. I think my own criticism was I just felt as though in the first round that maybe the Content Fund needed to be a little bit clearer about the kind of ideas that might be considered. So I think, if I remember rightly, in the very first round, I think it was about 50 that got through to the to be considered. And I think there was about 20 that were discarded straight away because they were traditional documentary, hour-long documentaries. Now, bear in mind, a lot of the companies that had got those through had spent a lot of time with the broadcasters and found out the broadcasters wanted that because the broadcasters were wanting to compete with the BBC. And then, of course, it seemed that the Audio Content Fund decided, well, actually, we don't want that. We want short form. We want this, that and the other. I just think it'd be better to be clearer is exactly
let,
what...
Let
is
Kate
needed,
answer
you know.
That point.
Yeah.
So I've heard this because then, you know, obviously you fund... I can't say commission, it's fund. You fund the short form content and then you get lots of short form content. Yeah, and actually, that's not kind of the point. The point is about the station's doing something that they wouldn't normally do, because I think that's the really
the
key thing.
The additionality.
So it is the additionality. So it's the ideas that do that. Mm. As you said, we are early days and we are learning. And, you know, certainly second time round, it was a lot clearer to us, the way that some of the stations are taking it versus working with the indies, and actually if there could be more collaboration there. So even stations having ideas that they take to indies and vice versa. I think that, you know, if you've got a presenter in the room who's got an idea, can that go with an indie? You know, all of those sorts of things. So there's some interesting learning. But my clear line on it is, you know, we want to see the radio stations do things that they wouldn't normally do. It doesn't matter what the format is.
Yeah.
And we want to hear things that, you know, almost have just have that edge on what's been done before as well. Because this isn't about turning commercial radio stations into the BBC. This is about bringing public content to the commercial radio
stations.
You've
also been accused of having a tick box that says, is this mental health? That's good.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it was just one of those things that happened in the first round that two got the mental health thing. But again, it's all about stories. It's all about new stuff, and it is all about stuff that you would normally do.
The one thing I would say,
the one thing about, you know, for example, the one that was funded for Magic is all about infertility.
Yeah,
so it's called the F word, and it's about, and you don't hear that on the radio.
No.
You definitely don't hear that on Magic. So you're bringing new stuff to an audience that's going to connect with them and help people.
And
so,
but of course, Radio 5 Live have copied them this last week,
well,
I suppose. But yeah, the positive thing about it, though, compared to the BBC commissioning process, I know this is funding, commissioning, whatever, is just that we were going back to what we were talking about Out of London, is that immediately you as a panel have got in your mind that you are trying to serve the whole of the UK.
Yeah.
And it's obvious from all the different things that have been funded that different parts of the UK have benefited from this.
Yeah.
And to me, I just think if you can think like that, then there's no excuse for the BBC, really.
That's an encomium for the ACF there from Ashley. Have you won anything, Stu?
We haven't. We're not bitter. No, we didn't. We put a few things in for the first round. We didn't put anything for the second round. I think the big thing for me was about budgets, because we had no idea where to pitch it. So regardless of what the format was, we were like, are we going in with £1,000? Is it fit? Like, where is this going? So I think we were kind of seeing how it went. But I think ultimately the positive thing for us, and we will put stuff in again, you know, we haven't not done it because of we didn't get anything around one. It's just been because of circumstance we haven't done it anymore. But I think it's just opened up more conversations. It's enabled us to have, as a business, conversations with people that we might not have had conversations with before. And regardless of the outcome of what gets commissioned, it's a positive for that.
It's the Radio Today Roundtable. We're in Salford. Who heard Donald from Washington?
Yes, listening in my kitchen.
What did you think of the president appearing on the Nigel Farage show then on LBC?
Well, political thoughts aside, I mean, what a moment for LBC. I was kind of coming home from work and saw it on Twitter.
And there wasn't much notice, was there?
There wasn't much. I mean, I think I must have seen it at 5 o'clock, and it was on at, you know, 6 o'clock, wasn't it? But just what an amazing moment. And there are very few moments where I actually stop and I go, oh my God, this, what, really?
Is this John Sessions?
I mean, what is this? So, and I think, you know, it was an incredible moment for LBC. I think Global did it very, very well.
Have you seen the video of them putting the call on air?
I haven't seen the video of that, but I think...
Because they actually bothered to get somebody to film the guy putting the call through.
Oh, wow.
And then he turns around and beams at the camera in a kind of, right, that's my career-defining moment. How about you?
It was incredible. And I think it was interesting because I was also watching the social reaction it was happening. And you kind of see lots of people getting very angry and very pleased in equal measure, maybe not equal measure, but I just kind of went, this is just a great moment for LBC. A
couple of things that I thought were quite interesting. Firstly, a lot of the abuse was being pushed at Nigel Farage, not at LBC. And also, of course, it came within a breath of them announcing LBC News. And what great timing that you start this new rolling news channel and then you've got that off the back of it as well.
But of course they're very lucky in the sense that, and they had to get in really quickly on this because of course we're about to have a general election and all the laws and rules. If they were trying to do it this week, they couldn't have done it. They had to really, that's the way why it happened so quickly. They had to do it last week. Otherwise, you know, they would have fallen foul of all the various
laws. You mentioned LBC News. This is the give us 20 minutes, we'll give you the world thing that they've just launched. Have you heard it?
Yes, I have.
What do you think of it?
I like it. As I've turned into a news junkie the last few years, and there have been times when I've been a little disappointed looking to hear a press conference or coverage of a by-election or something, and for whatever reason, neither 5 Live or LBC 97.3 have been there for that moment. And I think the fact they've got this rolling news service is I think really exciting, because I'm not massively into sport. So when there's something going on in an evening and I switch to Five Live hoping to hear coverage and they're covering whatever sport it might be, and I fully understand why, I'm not being served with what I want to hear, and this is a step to sorting that out.
Has anyone else heard it?
I haven't. I know Sky and TV terms have done something, haven't they? A non-Brexit news service, which apparently isn't doing very well.
People want to know.
There you go.
I think one of the things that comes out of this for me, on top of what you've just been mentioning, they've also had John Humphreys on Classic FM. Mm. This is a golden age for Global, isn't it?
It really is. My overriding image of Global is that they've kind of sharpened everything up. They're really clear on what they're about. They're really clear on who they can get into the room. And actually, they're not just a radio service anymore, are they? So I think most of my intake of any Global stuff, so LBC, well, we do listen to LBC in the mornings, but James O'Brien and all of that, they all come through via Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, as you said. And I think that's really telling that you heard it. You're like, oh, it's on Twitter, I'll go and have a listen. I think that's the bit that they've got really good at, is making sure that we're all aware of they're repurposing their content in a way that means we're all sort of aware of what's going on.
And they are an example to us all on brand values. What each brand in their suite of stations does. Is this right for Heart? Yes or no? Is it right for Capital, LBC, Classic FM, Radio X? Each station knows exactly what it does and doesn't step out of that area.
Shall we have an advertisement?
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionics Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Radio Today. We're in Salford at Audio Always, and this is the Radio Today Roundtable for November. Stuart Morgan is here, Kate Cocker is here, Chris Steams is here, and Ashley Byrne is here too. I wanted to ask you, Kate, about the gender pay gap, because the other big kind of radio story, I know she's usually covered in the newspapers for television, but Samira Ahmed is a radio presenter, and there she is taking her walks to court with a lot of other BBC women.
Yes.
What's your reflection on that?
So my reflection is that I'm very proud of all the women who have stepped up and they're backing her. And, you know, there's a real sense of this isn't right. This isn't what should be happening. Let's go at this and let's get it sorted. On the flip side, it's funny, isn't it? I sort of felt like the conversation had been had and that we shouldn't still be here. You know, it's quite straightforward that equal pay is equal pay, right? So what's going wrong here that means that we're still having this conversation?
If I may ask, have you experienced it yourself in your radio career?
Not that I know of. I did have one moment where I went for an interview and it was revealed afterwards that they considered paying me less than the role was thought of because of the way that I pitched it in the interview, which could open a whole other conversation. It's that classic thing of women undervalue themselves and they ask for less than the role and all of that. So that's a whole other conversation. But they then did pay me the job role pay. So it was kind of revealed as a you know, over a glass of wine or whatever. But I don't believe, or I don't think I want to believe, that there are people sat in rooms saying, well, we're not going to pay her as much money because she's a woman. I don't know where it's come from, if it's an archaic or historic thing. I don't know if we start getting into profile issues that I think across media there is an issue of how we pay people. So there's a whole load of nuance as well. But as I said, I can't believe we're still having the conversation. It's quite a straightforward argument, isn't it? What's fair is fair.
What about in the independent sector? Are you aware, Ash or Stu, that women get paid less than men for doing a production shift here or a research shift there?
If I'm honest, no. I mean,
about talent, I think.
I think it is mainly about talent, definitely. What do you think, Stu?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Kate. It doesn't really form part of my thinking, our thinking. I think this is an interesting case for me because I think the interesting thing that this brings up is where the comparisons are drawn. Mm. Because if it was the case where it was two presenters, for example, regardless of gender, doing exactly the same job, being paid different amounts, I think then that feels unfair. The interesting thing in this case, I'm not that close to it, it's just kind of what I've read, is that we're kind of comparing somebody doing Newswatch to another a male presenter doing points of view. I think, where do the comparisons stop? Where do you kind of draw the line in terms of how do you say that my job is comparable to another job? And I think it's that grey area that, that means that we are still having to talk about it, because I think now people are rightly kind of looking at all of the minute details around how talent contracts are formed, and there are so many minute details to all of them. And my other thought is, agents are very quiet in all of this conversation, and I don't know, but I imagine that maybe some males in the BBC who are being paid a lot more had no idea that was a thing, because you've got people who are pushing up fees, and you know, there are lots of other factors at play.
I wonder if a lot of agents undervalue their own female roster.
Potentially.
I think there's a possibility. Let's talk about digital radio. We have an expert on that here, because we've got somebody who runs a digital radio station. It's called Chris Country, and he is Chris Stevens. You've got some competition now, haven't you? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's both. So Chris Country broadcasts from two buildings in that direction, and has done for a number of years. We've been on digital radio for 4 years now. And having been on the air for a number of years as pretty much the only digital country station in the UK, we now have competitors in both Bauer and Global as well. Bauer with Country Hits Radio and Global with Smooth Country. So, yes, it has changed things. And I think the positive thing, certainly from the music side, is firstly that two major groups are interested in running country stations. That's really exciting for country music. And it means that now when artists come over, there's more publicity, there's more interest, there's more people wanting to chat with them, there's more people sharing that enthusiasm on the air. Slightly selfishly, I quite liked it when it was just us. But, you know.
Well, it's very noble of you to even mention the opposition stations. I'm wondering what having all these new stations has done to our own listening habits. Because when you look at Radar, some of them have got very, very tiny audiences. Mm. I mean, has it altered your suite of listening at home?
Yes. I mean, we listen to Virgin a lot more, really.
Well, but you have a family member involved.
So, yeah, I think the interesting thing is it's all to do with mood and choice. And as long as you know that it's there, then it's findable and you can listen to it. So, I mean, I listened to Chris Country when it was first on. I haven't listened to the Country Hits Radio. We listen to a lot of digital-only radio stations, I guess. But I think Radar is definitely showing that people are flicking. And I think that's the key, really. I think now that there's more choice, there's more spaces to go away.
I listen to all sorts of things. I think my problem is that, we've got more and more stations, a bit like when we got more and more TV stations. But I still do not think, from a discerning listener, if I put myself as a discerning listener, that sounds a bit snobby, doesn't it? But perspective, that there is still enough choice for me. I feel as though there's lots of stations doing exactly the same thing. And I find that really frustrating.
What do you want, then, Ash?
I want
musicals, don't you? You do.
Well, maybe. Well, there is
one.
A musical station.
Yeah, there is one.
No, well, I just want content. I want really good, strong content that's a bit different. That doesn't just assume that radio is about news or about music. That actually radio can do lots of things, and it's a fantastic palette. And what I find really disappointing about a lot of these small-scale DAB stations that are dotted up all around the country, I know it's all a bit of a test at the moment, but you listen to them and the lights are on, but nobody's at home. It literally is just it's music constantly with a few ads and things like that, and there's just no content there. But, you know, everyone's got different tastes, you know. I know some builders that came round to our house recently, and where they were listening to Kiss Tree, and literally the same songs were played at the same time on the next day. And you're just thinking, what's all that about? But they love it. You know, so everyone's different, but I just think I want more content.
There are some really interesting case studies around now. I did a talk about this at Radio Days Asia, looking at splinter brands, and Heart 80s is a great example. A new 80s radio station. We probably all thought that with Absolute 80s and some other ones around the country, we're probably doing okay for 80s stations. But they've got 1.6 million listeners on Heart 80s without it really affecting Absolute 80s. That is fascinating. And then at the other end of the scale, in a way, you look at Scala Radio, which has had two radars now and has actually gone down in the second radar after figures that I suspect may not have been where they were hoping for to start with. And you think, well, actually, Scala's putting in all this content and these presenters and these shows and stuff, and Heart 80s is playing the 80s songs that Heart used to play before they stopped playing 80s. And it's this weird combination of actually what makes people listen.
A lot of it's about the power of marketing, though, isn't it, really? You know, I still think a lot of people don't know Scala exists. It's not there. You know, they know Heart's there. You know, if you've got lots of money you can market, then you're going to get an audience.
There is certainly value to being part of a well-known brand, absolutely. Although it's interesting that Scala got quite a bit of marketing in London, and Bauer's new country station actually now has more total hours, even though Scala's on D2 and the country station's on multiplexes here and there. So
Scala is quite a difficult idea to get across, because if you think it's just wall-to-wall classical music, which you sort of expect it to be, because it's a digital niche station, you'd be quite disappointed with the amount of chat.
And there's a danger of stations like that, that you end up with some very, very passionate P1 listeners, and then everyone else is like a P8 that listens every now and then, but nothing in between. And then you're trying to serve two completely different types of audience. And that's not just a problem unique to Scala, but generally you end up super serving a few people.
I think this, for me, and looking at the Scala example, is a great example of understanding what the market want. I don't understand. I enjoy listening to Scala. I don't love it. I can't understand how it fits neatly into the radio landscape. And like you were saying earlier, Kate, when you've got Global having razor sharp brands, the audience know exactly what they are and what they stand for. It's probably a good lesson in making sure you know exactly what your brand is about before you put it on the radio.
Just one tiny thing. What is that station that plays musicals?
Oh, hang on. This will come to me.
Well, if you get it, it's amazing. Go on then.
Matinee radio are you talking about?
I don't know.
Yes.
Matinee radio, isn't it?
Matinee's great.
Yeah.
Well, it's time to find out what our guests have been listening to. We've got a panel of four, so you're going to have to be reasonably brief, if you wouldn't mind. Let's start with Kate.
I'm going to put a little elbow to the person on my right to say that How Do You Cope is sounding very good. New podcast from Audio Always. But the one I'm going to recommend, actually, for all the radio people here. So Craig Parkinson is in Line of Duty. He's an actor in Line of Duty.
Dot Cotton.
He is Dot Cotton. He's also in Control. He's an excellent actor. He does a podcast called Two Shot Pod that he started about 2 years ago, interviewing other actors, a bit like Alec Baldwin when he was doing Here's a Thing early days. And this season, he's decided to go stretch out sort of poets and entertainers. And last week he interviewed Dermot O'Leary about what it is to be a presenter. And it is excellent. I love hearing Dermot talk about the craft of radio and how much he loves live and how much he loves presenting and how much he went into it. And Craig, he talks about interviewing as well. And over the last 2 years has clearly learnt how to interview people because Dermot's stories really, really come through. So I would recommend Craig Parkinson's Two Shot Pod.
When I started Radio 2, they were like, play what you want. And that was that's why I'm still there. I love it. They're so trusting for that.
So that you make your own playlist?
In the afternoon, we used to play 3 hours of anything we wanted. Now I've moved to breakfast. They were very polite and they went, would you mind playing playlist? But then I make the show. I've got a small company, we make the show. So the two guys I work with go to playlists once a week. So we put stuff on playlist. And actually also you trust the Radio 2 playlist is pretty good. Mm. So in the time we've been doing the breakfast show, we haven't played anything we've not wanted to play. And also you can pick and choose. There's like 30 odd songs in the playlist, so it's not like you go, you have to play this like high octane pop song. You can go, I'll play that.
So you kind of make your own playlist up from the playlist.
Well, and there's only two songs I think we play a show or a couple of hours, and then the rest of it we just do ourselves.
And does that still happen when you have a deputy, when you're not there?
I think so.
Because I've noticed the music choice isn't as good when you're not there.
Well, that's very good. Yeah.
Craig Parkinson's one of our speakers at Pods Up North. There you go.
When is Pods Up North?
It's the 23rd of November. It's up here in Manchester. We're doing it at the Federation House. We've got Jonathan Wall's going to come and open the day. He's going to be talking about control of BBC Sounds. And we've got a great day lined up for people who want to grow audiences, market, all that sort of thing. And it's been a really great experience in sort of straddling the broadcasting world, because obviously we're all radio people and we make podcasts now, but podcasters aren't radio people. They're real people who do, well, we're all real people as well, but they're all people who have hobbies or they're in creative agencies or whatever. And, you know, for me, this is really about getting all those people in one room and They're starting to see the whites of their eyes.
Let's have a suggestion from Chris.
Okay, two highly commended and then the main one. Brexit cast just gets better and better.
Yeah.
I love it so much. It helps to counteract the general depression of the other side of Brexit.
And it's morphing into election cast.
Well, it is, yes. And I heard the first one yesterday, and I'll be intrigued to see how that goes. But I love what they do. Secondly, while I was in the States recently, I was listening to the Kid Craddock morning show in Dallas, which is in some ways, a typical morning show with a team of people doing the kind of stuff you expect. What makes it unique is that Kid Craddock passed away around about a decade ago, and the team have managed to keep the show not only doing well but still rated number one in the majority of its markets, including Dallas. And I think there's a fascinating case study on how to do that, because he died unexpectedly. Suddenly he was the name of the show, the face of the show. He built this team around him, and the way the team have carried that show on and evolved it as well is fascinating and I think really, really great. However, the one I was going to share is I find business models fascinating. I love trying to understand how businesses work and why they work. And there's a podcast in the States called Spectacular Failures, which is about when they haven't worked and when they've come crumbling down. Examples include Kodak and Trump Tower and various other businesses, some of which I wasn't familiar with because they're very US-based. It's made by one of the companies that makes quite a lot of content for NPR in the States. But it piques both the human interest and the business side, and I find it a fascinating and really interesting list.
So leveraged buyouts became private equity, and in 2005 it found its way to Toys R Us. A trio of companies, including the one Mitt Romney founded, Bain Capital, organized the leverage buyout of the toy seller to the tune of $6.6 billion. By that time, Romney had left the firm and was governor of Massachusetts. The three firms pitched in $1.3 billion of their investors' money on the sale. But that meant that Toys R Us was left to shoulder the remaining $5-plus billion. Now, imagine how heavy $5 billion might be. What if they were stacked on top of you? You wouldn't be able to swim through all those bills, Scrooge McDuck style. You would literally suffocate under the weight. And that's exactly what happened to Toys R Us. After the restructuring, most of its revenue went to pay off interest, which makes it nearly impossible to fix up stores or hire more staff. Cosman says the company could possibly have handled the debt and the crushing interest payments that came with it were it not for the radical shifts happening in retail.
They didn't predict when they bought Toys R Us that online would have the impact it did.
Spectacular Failures.
Marvellous. Ashley.
Why, I'm going for a program, a radio program, as opposed to a podcast. And that is a traditional program. It's been going for a long time, but I just think, out of all the hassle and things that are going on in the world, Brexit and climate change and whatever, you need some light relief. And I think Paul O'Grady on a Sunday evening is just absolutely fabulous and continues to be top notch. You know, he's irreverent way of looking at the world, his banter with Malcolm, his producer. I just think it's really, really good. And also, you know, let's face it, you know, the BBC and other broadcasters at the moment have got a sort of a bit of an obsession, really, in trying to aim younger and younger and younger and younger and younger. And Paul's there, and he's still got this show, 5 till 7, long may it continue. I don't know what it is about Paul, but you do get the impression that you know him well. You know, he's a friend and you could go and chat to him, whatever. And he seems to see the sort of other side of the modern world and sort of, you know, technology and whatever it is he'll have a go at and how the BBC works. I mean, that's the great thing. He gets away with saying so many things about the BBC.
You know who that was, don't you? That was a lovely Betty Driver there, alias Betty Turpin, and a hot pot lovey from behind the bar of the Rover's Return. And that was a song called Twitter Pasted. She had a lovely voice, Betty, didn't she? But it went, you know, Malcolm. It was so sad. It sort of, I think, a vocal cords calcified, if I remember somebody telling me. Yeah, lovely, lovely lady. Couple of messages for you now. Oh, we got a lost cinema. Right, hello, Paul. You may well remember this one. The Futurist Cinema was located in Lime Street in Liverpool, and it was opened in 1912. I remember it well. I've seen quite a few films there. It was quite an upmarket establishment, if memory serves me correctly, and it was the first place I ever experienced CinemaScope. The Futurists had a plush auditorium decorated in the French Renaissance style and a gorgeous facade. All cinemas were like that of that period. They were stunning. The Asaldo in Birkenhead, an Art Deco palace, sadly pulled down for a car park.
There's Paul O'Grady on Radio 2. Stu.
A podcast was suggested to me called The Ballad of Billy Balls, which I've just started listening to. So don't ask me how it ends. But yeah, it's a really fascinating listen. And for me, it's a really great example of audio craft and storytelling. It's kind of true crime meets personal experience. It's figuring out the circumstances around an American punk singer's death. It explores interpersonal relationships, but also kind of asks the question of how important is it that we do know the truth, and maybe sometimes secrets or, you know, things that we don't understand are fine to be left in the past. So, yeah, this is my current addiction.
And who makes this?
It's a Crime Time podcast.
One night, I came around the corner of 3rd Avenue, and it was snowing. There was Billy outside shoveling snow away from his door, and he was wearing a pair of boots, like rubber boots, because it was freezing, and he was completely buck naked and in the middle of the street and shoveling away. He was very free, I guess. Didn't give a fuck about anybody else or what they thought. He was confrontational, brash, and he also had a big, really big heart.
This is Robbie Bowman, a musician friend of Billy's and the guy who went to the morgue with my mom to identify Billy's body.
I went with Billy's very close friend, Robbie Bowman, to the medical examiner.
We took a cab up to the city morgue. I'd never been there before. And they brought us downstairs. And there was a window with a curtain. And they opened the curtain. And he was there. And he had a covering from his hairline up. There was some sort of covering. And there was a blanket from his neck down. We were seeing him in profile, and I remember thinking how hard it is to recognize somebody without their hair and without seeing them standing up.
Just before we finish, has anybody else been following The Missing Crypto Queen?
Yeah, I had that as well. My other one that I'm just showing you.
Which
there.
Is just finished.
It's just finished.
And so we're not, we shouldn't say
no,
anything about
it this morning.
The damp squib of an ending.
I think they did it quite well. I think I can't say anything, can I?
Do you believe it? Do you believe that they were making it as they were doing the research?
Yes, I do. I do. Now you've made me question it, even just by asking. There are bits where you go, they definitely were, and there are bits where I'm now going, maybe they added that in later.
Odd to say right at the beginning, this is an 8-part series, but we don't know what's going to happen. Because what if something had happened and they needed to make a 9th or a 10th?
Is that a commissioning thing?
Well, it shouldn't be. If it's a podcast, they can make as many as they like.
We've made an 8-part series and this is what we've got to fit.
But it is the defining podcast de nos jours, isn't it?
People are consuming
it in vast numbers.
It's got that kind of American style production, the way that they weave it all together. It's quite open, the storytelling's good, they use the narration well, it sounds very natural.
They don't edit out a lot of ums and ahs, which we naturally would,
I think that's what makes it, from a production point of view, production ears point of view, makes it quite exciting to hear the British version of that.
And it's got tinkly music.
It has very weird, scary music.
Bulgarian
but all
music.
Commissioned, which is, you know, another area that I think for many podcasters, it's quite enviable to have that kind of music made for you, you know? So it was good.
It's been a huge pleasure having you all here. Anybody got any other business before we depart? Oh, maybe Chris.
Oh, I was just going to mention...
You want something to plug?
Well, yes and no. I will, actually, now that together with Paul Chantler, my company, Dave Webb, has made an advice guide of how to broadcast during an election period.
which sign me up.
Yes,
we all need one of those on community stations.
As I'm sure you know, Paul Chandler has been doing legal training for many years.
He's the boss.
And we work with a lot of commercial and community stations, so we thought it could be a helpful thing for all involved. That's on our website, devweb.com/election. A downloadable PDF.
Public service.
And I was also just going to big up, as they say, a couple of other UK production companies whose work I hear around the world when I've been travelling around. This is on the imaging side of things. On the Sly, out of London, whose work is on some really big stations in the US and sounding excellent as well. And also Contraband Media, who make Imaging Blueprint, a production service, which I also keep coming across as I travel around the world. And I think it's really admirable, the amount of work coming out of the UK in all sides of audio, from documentary to podcast to imaging as well. And I think we've got a lot to be proud of.
Well, that's a very good point to end. Ashley, Chris, Kate and Stu, thanks for having us. Thank you, everybody, for being on the panel. Back to you, Stu Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor Dan. And having a birthday this week as well. So a big happy birthday to Trevor. Still to come on the Radio Today programme, we've got some fantastic radio moments from David Lloyd. Before that, though, a quick word about Clean Feed. It's a great thing to use if you're doing an OB from the Christmas lights switch on in the next few weeks, maybe. And you haven't got a decent quality way of connecting your outside broadcast kit back to the studio. Clean Feed has been designed for radio people and for podcasters. And it's a really good, simple way to connect in live quality audio just using your browser. You can even record within the browser as well, maybe if you're hosting a podcast or something like that. Clean Feed won't cost you anything to get started. It'll only take you 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes, you'll be doing your first live interview or recording or an OB or something. Find out more at cleanfeed.net.
It's 2 years this week since the BBC Director General stood up at the Gillard Awards with some rare head office encouragement for local radio. Cuts, which had been planned, were no longer being introduced.
I thought that that change in the budget, those sort of levels of cuts, couldn't sustain. And in fact, insofar as we can find more money in, you know, we're all finding, aren't we? Every sector is finding money difficult. Insofar as we can find more money, I think the investment in local radio is one of the things I do want to prioritise in my time at the BBC. And why? Because I see brilliant work being done. I think the future of local radio is really important in terms of building our communities. And I think in hard times, we need to know and hold to account our decision makers. But I go back, we also need to celebrate. And as I go around the country, I see this in all sorts of ways. And I want to build on the differences. You know, Leicester is not Nottingham, is not Derby. You know, Sheffield is not Leeds. And I want editors in local radio stations to be able to reflect in their own ways the communities they're serving much more strongly.
Tony Hall speaking on Radio Leicester 2 years ago. And that station launched 52 years ago.
Good afternoon from Radio Leicester, broadcasting on 95.05 VHF. Here is the Postmaster General, the Right Honourable Edward Short.
This is the first hometown radio station.
We should be on the air about 17 or 18 hours a day, and about 4 hours of the 17 will be local output. Now, these aren't 4 hours together in one block. Mainly, they will be in the early morning, at lunchtime, and in the early evening.
4 hours a day for, shall we say, a comparatively small station like yourself is quite a lot. Where are you going to get the material from?
There's no shortage of material at all. My main problem has been in planning the schedules, what to get into those 4 hours. In fact, certainly in the early weeks, there are going to be many people and many organisations who are going to be disappointed because we haven't used their idea.
The first manager of Radio Leicester, which began this week in 1967, and with it, the whole BBC local radio network. Comedy is now a podcasting favourite, returning, in a sense, to radio's roots. This week, 65 years ago, Hancock's Half Hour began on the BBC Light programme. Six series ran on radio with over 100 episodes, ending in 1959, and they were written by the famous Ray Galton and Alan Simpson. It was a show which moved on gently from stage variety to sitcom that we recognise so well now. And a little like Brexit Cast, it ended up on the telly too.
The BBC presents Tony Hancock with Moira Lister, Bill Kerr and Sidney James in
Hancock's Half Hour.
Yeah?
Yes, this is the first night of the lad's new radio series. Such occasions are usually marked by a small celebration of some sort, but Tony Hancock is really doing it in style. He's going to throw a cocktail and dinner party. So let's go over to Tony's flat in the English Quarter of London's West End, where he and Bill Kerr are making the arrangements.
Hancock's Half Hour, which began this week in 1954. Tony Hancock took his life 14 years later, aged 44.
Hurry up, Kerr. Haven't you finished typing out those invitations yet?
In 1980, no way. This week, commercial radio came to Devon.
You're listening to test transmissions from the Independent Broadcasting Authority. These transmissions are in preparation for the new independent local radio service for Exeter and Torbay, which will be provided by the IBA's contractor, Devon Air Radio Limited.
That's the Nolans, and gotta pull myself together. It's 9 minutes past six on Devon Dawn with me, Bob Kingsley, on Devon Air. Isn't it exciting? Our first day's transmissions on 450 metres medium wave and 95.8 in stereo VHF. If you had your tape machines rolling, I hope it all recorded okay. Now, on the programme, as per usual, every weekday on Monday to Friday, we'll have news, sport and weather on the hour and the half hour. The Farmer's Forecast at 6.15, that's in about 5 minutes' time, will give you the weather and also some information. And then at 7.15, travel information, and that comes up again at a quarter past eight and a quarter to nine. What the Papers Say with Keith Cooper at 20 to eight and 20 to nine. And the Yesteryear Competition. This is a chance for you to phone in on Exeter 30121. Not yet. That's at about 10 to seven and 10 to eight. Yesteryear Competition. I give you a maximum of four clues, and you have to try and guess what the year is. Now, the more clues that you have to get before you answer the questions correctly, then the less you win. So obviously, if you get it on the first clue, you win yourself a hit album. If you don't get it on the first clue, then we go down to clue number two, and you only get four singles, and so on to clue number four. That's at about 10 to 7, but of course, at the moment, it's just past 10 past 6, so in a few moments' time, we'll have an oldie, and then the Farmer's Forecast.
The more you listen, the less you win. Yes, Devon Air, launching this week 39 years ago, it was to lose its licence 14 years later. The last significant offshore pirate station was Laser 558. After just a short and very influential time on air, it closed this week 34 years ago.
For the crew and the music presenters of Laser Radio, it was bad enough when the surveillance scared off British suppliers of food and water. But then there was a major electrical breakdown and the radio station raised the distress flag. At first, the station refused help from the observers nearby, but this morning, when the MV Communicator's anchor could not be raised, the Department of Trade vessel was called over to help. The Department of Trade claim it was their operation which made life difficult for Laser Radio and impossible to obtain electrical spare parts. Laser Radio, now off the air, is due to arrive in Harwich late this afternoon.
Laser 558 with John Leeds and a great old memory from Supertramp. Dreamer.
Dreamer. The last program on Laser 558.
Here we go.
And there it was, gone. So with Radio 1 reprimanded for language from Elton John 15 years ago...
I haven't been to BBC for so long, I didn't know this was... I thought I was, nearly went to the other one.
Yeah, what's up to I now?
I saw Tony Blackburn with a walking stick and I thought, nah, it's the wrong fucking place.
I'll tell you, they've got the... Ooh.
Tony Blackburn joining BBC Radio 2 9 years ago.
Dr. Hook at number two, when you're in love with a beautiful woman. Well, that's my very first pick of the pops, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
BBC Radio Birmingham launching 49 years ago.
Time for the first ever news bulletin from Radio Birmingham, read on this occasion by news editor Roger Clark.
The death of Jimmy Young 4 years ago.
Ooh, that went in a hurry. Let's kick off this morning with the Archers. We will have a tiny touch of what? This.
Sugar. And the hugely successful Yorkshire Coast Radio, launching 26 years ago.
Good morning, it's 9 o'clock, and welcome to the 126th independent radio station broadcasting from our studios in Scarborough. Welcome to the new sound of Yorkshire Coast Radio on 96.2 FM.
Those are this week's radio moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassar.